Der Fußball ist zurück in der zweiten Liga.
Bravo, macht Tempo, wartet auf Harte. Zwanke kommt und jetzt ist es Klos. Also Arminia Bielefeld.
Penny, 2-0. 2-0 für den FC St. Pauli.
Diese
Flanke, Tor, nächster Treffer.
Ist heuer Fernandes mit vorne. Ja klar ist er mit vorne. Kittel mit der Ecke, Feuerball und da!
Guten Tag and welcome to the first of three parts of our 2022-23 Zweite Bundesliga review. I'm Matthew Karagic and it is a pleasure to have your company. Over the next week and a half, we'll be going through all 18 teams, how their seasons went, get some fan perspective on how they felt the campaigns went, and we'll finish off with our own opinions on how each of the 18 sides fared throughout the campaign. As always, to discuss everything Zweite Bundesliga is the one and only Eva Lotterbohler. Eva, good morning to you. It's been an interesting few weeks to digest. We know at the moment, it seems like the 18 sides are going to be confirmed. At the time this podcast goes out, we'll know who the 18 teams are. We're still waiting on all the Herder stuff, but we think they'll get a license in the end. Shame. So how have you been? Obviously, we will get to your football later down the line, but a lot to look forward to in terms of digesting the top six sides.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's really interesting this season, obviously, because when it comes to the season review, it's always obviously not only looking at the second leg of the season, but also the first. I think especially for this season, this is a real task to kind of go through because it has been so long, you kind of forget half of the things that happened. In the first half, I mean, the season started like kind of a month from now and a year ago. And I mean, it's crazy what all happened in this space of months and obviously the break then and stuff. So it's, I think it's always, kind of funny to look back to also what we expected before the season started from teams. And obviously it's always good. That's why we kind of ask the fans as well to get their opinion because it's always, a bit different. They have another view and things, but also, it just helps us to understand how we can kind of look at the season towards the end of the, and kind of always have a small look onto what is coming into the new season.
Yeah, it's crazy to think that in 6 weeks' time, we do it all again. It doesn't seem like almost long enough. Was talking with someone about how like the Champions League final was on Saturday. Didn't even watch it. Didn't care. You know, you when you watch a lot of football throughout the duration, you get to like June and you don't really want to. There's just no interest in wanting to keep it. That's what I think. I feel like that's why it seems like every football fan goes on holiday during that period and detoxes and gets through before the new season begins. But As mentioned before, we're going to talk about the top six sides and we're going to start with your league champions, Heidenheim, who, of course, on the final match day produced one of the biggest miracles known to footballing history, scoring twice in the space of stoppage time to beat Jan Regensburg. And thanks to Darmstadt completely throwing the game away in Fürth, they were crowned league champions. 19 wins, 10 draws and 5 losses, 67 goals, which is one of the best in the league, not the best. And 36 goals against top scorer Tim Kleindienst with 25 goals. Jan-Niklas Bester had 12. Dennis Tomala had 8. Bester was also the leading assist man for Heidenheim. He had 13 in what was a fantastic season. First season in Heidenheim. Let's get a bit of perspective and we've called in an expert to dissect what made Heidenheim so great. So here is head of scouting and data analysis for Nürnberg Frauen, it is Florian Singer.
So they finally made it. Heidenheim always sort of scratching at the Bundesliga and now they've been promoted. I think when you look at Heidenheim, there's one thing that sort of sticks out and that's that they're a very, very physical team and have been for quite some time. If you look at like their running stats, which is something I don't usually do, but in this case it's really, really impressive because they dominate every category in that department. They have the most kilometers, they have the most sprints, and this really, I mean, they lead this category by a country mile. They're like more than 20 sprints per game more than any other team, and this is huge when it translates into everything. They have the most intense runs, so all of these categories sort of already define a sort of playing style with Frank Schmidt for a very, very long time. And this system has been drilled into these players, and it's finally come to fruition. Other physical things that play a big part is that they're very, very dominant in the air. They have the best heading percentage in the second Bundesliga. They have the most headers. They have the most headed goals, the second most goals from corners. First is Darmstadt, by the way, which means both promoted teams are kings of the corners. So all of these physical aspects of the game, they dominate that, and this is part of why they've been promoted. It's sort of a cliche, but in a way this is Zweite Bundesliga Fußball, and so in a way this is one of the reasons why. It's not the only reason why, because if you look at other factors, like from that sprint also stems the fact that they have the third most goals in counterattacks. They scored the most goals from outside the penalty area, which leads to an interesting fact that because over the last 3 years, they've accumulated like an expected goals under performance of about 12 to 14, depending on the model. And this season, it all flipped. They've overperformed their XG immensely, depending on the model, where between 16 and 19 goals more than statistically could have been expected. So all of this flipped on their head, on its head, and maybe it's sort of regression to the mean, and maybe it's just luck, but all of this comes together, and a big part of that is Tim Kleindienst, of course, who scored 25 goals from just 15 XG, so he had a huge overperformance. He was very clinical in front of goal. And part of it is the shots from outside the area. And also a third factor is that offensively, they were very, very lethal in the first 15 minutes before the break. They scored 20 goals in the 15 minutes before the halftime break. The next highest number is Hamburg with 12. So you see the huge difference there. They were there in that department. And that might be because of the physical aspects, where you start of the first half ends and you start to tire out a bit. And teams just want to get into that break. And that's where they strike. But on the other side of the ball, they're also defensively very, very solid. Fewest goals conceded on the counter, second fewest after set pieces. All in all, fewest goals scored before the fewest goals conceded before the halftime break. All of that comes into play as well. And of course, all that physical play also plays a big part on the other end. So not only offensively physical, but defensively as well. And when you boil it all down, all of this basically means that Frank Schmidt has been running the same style of play for a very, very long time. He's always played four at the back with a big man up front, lots of direct passing, going for second balls, very, very physical, as I said. And the core group has been playing that style for a very, very long time. If you look at the time that these players have been in the club, when you look at the players with the most minutes, you look at Müller in goal, who has, like, he's been there since 2005. Kleindienst up front has been there off and on again since 2016. You have Busch since 2017, Mainka since 2018, Fernbach since 2019. So this core group has been playing together for a very, very long time, and they know what Frank Schmidt wants. And every year Frank Schmidt has to replace players, and always he does it very well. And this year he added Beste and Maloney, and this worked very well. So in the end, I think the reasons for the success of Heidenheim are twofold. One is that sort of the players have been used to the system and there has been consistency in the coaching position. And the other part is just that they're very, very physical and their style fit the league this year, and this is why they are going up. And I'm very, very looking forward to how this translates into Bundesliga Fußball.
Thank you, Florian. And of course, you would expect someone with such footballing knowledge to break it down for us in such a great way. And also, congratulations, Florian, for being part of the Nürnberg side that gained promotion to the first division. Eva, he touches on so many great points then, and the numbers are very much in the favour of Heidenheim. One thing that we always like to touch on as like an easy win is them at home. Out of 51 possible points, they took 40, one defeat in that trend, 12 victories. That sets up a really good basis, but then you have guys like Kleindienst who perform well above their expected goals. You've got Bester who, in his first season after being with Regensburg for a couple, hits the ground running. And it was the perfect mix of a few new players that made immediate impacts and the established core being able to play at their level or above their level to get Heidenheim to the Bundesliga.
Yeah, and I mean, even one thing, obviously, you had the core, but there was a very, very consistent first 11 Heidenheim team. And this is probably something other teams like Darmstadt, like HSV, couldn't really look back to. There was not really this. We sometimes say that the lineup creates itself, sometimes because the performance was just that good that you can just put the same 11 on the pitch week in, week out with minor fixes. And then obviously you have the reason because there are no other players to put on in this first 11. And I mean, that was the case for Darmstadt sometimes, for HSV especially as well. And then when it came to defense and stuff, and that they had to switch a lot, Heidenheim didn't really have to do that. And obviously, we spoke about this plenty of times during this season, that especially Jan-Niklas Bester was the perfect, like maybe the last piece of the puzzle, together with Kleindienst, who obviously was at Heidenheim before. But they worked together very well. And I mean, they had their strengths. They had their weaknesses as well. But with Heidenheim, we speak about the team, we just let their strengths overlap their weaknesses. Obviously, there were a couple of games where you didn't really know where they lost that, and where you could see that the match plan they had kind of came into place too late, or their opponents had a very good way of working against that. But if we talk about Kleindienst and all the things Flo just said, I really, really want to touch on him, because obviously he scored the most goals, and this is where we look at first, but he also won most of the duels in the league, 541 most headers as well. He also was high up in the statistic when it came to fouling his opponents, but obviously, because you can really see that it was the first line of defending, really. I mean, the first line where they say, okay, this is where we have to be physical. It's not only in midfield and in defense, but we have to start being physical when it comes with the first ball and et cetera. And obviously, when it comes to defending, but also possession. And yeah, the most intense runs, best at the most sprints. So this is really all underlining what Flo Zenger said. And I mean, you really had the feeling that this combination between Kleindienst and Bester, and obviously this was the year where we all say, only year where we kind of think just from outside perspective, no big names except for the ones that were already in the Zweite Liga. This was the season where you kind of could get it. Next year, it's going to be much more difficult. But they did it very well. And obviously, Frank Schmidt has huge respect for the league and really, really liked how he, after like in the press conference, he was really, really respectful to Regensburg as well. I'm really interested to see what Heidenheim can do, especially with they know how to, even on bad days, not to lose games, but make draws out of it. And I think this is something that could help them. And I'm obviously they have to check with a whole overperforming thing. This is obviously always something we kind of want to be careful about, that only because you've overperformed. But at the same time, Heidenheim has been part of the top flight of the Zweite Liga for quite some time. I wouldn't really scratch them off the possibility that they could actually manage to survive the first year in the Bundesliga yet. And obviously, once again, huge congrats to the team, to the officials, to everyone at the club. They deserve to be in the Bundesliga for what they have accomplished the last couple of years.
And as a club, they go very much against the grain of what many teams would do in that situation, where very rarely do you see clubs hold on to a manager for such a significant period of time. But you can tell, much like with Freiburg, that's probably the most apt comparison, the human connection that he's got with everyone at the club, the fans. You know, it's just there's a clear understanding of, regardless of what's happening on the pitch, that there's a very much a stick together through thick and thin. And you know, if there is a manager in German football who was worthy of a chance or a crack at first division football, it'd be Frank Schmidt. He's been so loyal to Heidenheim, and I think for in a romantic sense, it's so nice that he's taken Heidenheim, club that he's been at for more than 15 years, from, you know, the Regionalliga all the way up to the Bundesliga. So it will be interesting. One more thing that I forgot to add statistic-wise, Kevin Müller, who Flo mentioned, he also led the league in clean sheets. He had 15, which means that he would win if they had awards, which they don't for some reason. He would have won the Golden Glove. So, joining them in the Bundesliga next season is Darmstadt. In Thorsten Liebknecht's second season with Darmstadt, last season they finished fourth. They had the best offense in the league. They scored 71 goals. They managed only 50 this season, but they won 20 games, and the difference being they automatically gained promotion on the penultimate match day of the season. Top scorer, Philipp Tietz, he had 12, and then Braden Manu with 7. Patrick Pfeiffer was their third top scorer with 4. It was something that we talked about throughout the season. They weren't able to score, but what they were able to do very well was defend. 33 goals conceded, which was the best defense in the league. And they had the best in terms of goalkeeping as well. Marcel Schoen led the league in save percentage at 76.3. And goals saved. This was like a metric that Footmob have, where he, it's prevented, I don't know what it says presented, but he's prevented close to 11 goals this season on his own. He had a stellar campaign. Let's get some reaction. Daniel from the Hock und Weit podcast, that is your one-stop shop for all things Darmstadt in the German language. Let's hear what he has to say about this season.
Dear listeners of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast, my name is Daniel from the SV Darmstadt 98 podcast Hoch und Weit, and I have the honor and pleasure to talk to you about the season of the Lilien, of the season 22-23. Well, back in summer 22, we lost two key players in Luca Pfeiffer and Tim Skarke, and we only signed two players, or two first teamers, in Oscar Willemsson, a young Swedish striker from IFK Gothenburg, and Christoph Zimmermann, who arrived from Norwich City. We started and ended our season with a loss and sending offs of Patrick Pfeiffer, which is quite a coincidence, but in the end we finished on in the second place and won promotion to the Erste Bundesliga, which is for us a good thing. The base of this promotion winning season was the 21 game unbeaten run in the league from July until the end of February, where when we lost away at Heidenheim with who scored a last minute winner against us. Also, I want to point out to the massive injury problems that the team plagued during the season, especially in fall and winter. But somehow, the strong collective and the team spirit made up for it. Everyone every player who went to cover for it did it very good, and so somehow we grinded out the results and made it into the winter break, which was quite a relief for us, at least for me. Yeah, overall we conceded only 33 goals. 9 of them came also in the last 4 matches, where we were nearly about to bottle our promotion season. But yes, which is about 13 goals less than the season before. Also, we scored less goals than 21-22. Where we scored 71 goals, but this time only 50 goals. But we also won 7 points more than last season, which shows you a bit we were a bit clinical in when it comes to grinding out results and just making sure 3 points are in the bag. So what we can the high scoring results came a bit weren't as much as the last season, but in the end we got where we wanted to. Certainly not the outstanding players, Marcel Schoen and goals, Fabian Holland, Christoph Zimmermann, Matthias Bader, as well as Philipp Tietz and Marvin Mehle. Also honorable mentions go out to Patrick Pfeiffer, the central defender, who will now play for Augsburg in the next season, and also Braden Manu, pacey and tricky winger. Yes, that's it from me. Hope you have a good summer break. Keep on listening to the podcast. I will. Thank you and bye-bye for this nice opportunity to talk a bit about my favorite team, SV Darmstadt 98. See you.
Thank you, Daniel, and I mean, he's covered it all perfectly. This is why the fan perspective is great. But what else could we add, Eva? Their season, you know, they were top of the pile for 22 of the 34 match days. They had great consistency through injury. One of the biggest talking points throughout the campaign was in defence. They seemed to just have players dropping left, right and centre. Yep. Credit to Torsten Liebekesch in particular to find solutions, whether that was switching to the back three system, which they used for a lot of the campaign. But they were a team that found solutions when it seemed that at a lot of times it would be difficult to salvage something.
Yeah, and I want to really point out how important a collective is. I mean, we talked about how Dynamo, their collective was a consistent first 11 or first 14 kind of, and for Darmstadt it had to be more because of everything obviously Daniel pointed out, and that was something that was very impressive. And obviously we spoke about how they come out of the winter break, because this is always with clubs like that where we talk about how they can perform. And obviously for them the only thing we could really criticize is that they did not finish the season sooner, probably, and obviously didn't get the points between them and Heidenheim so they could actually win the Champions, because let's be honest, they would have been deserved, just because if we look at how long they were first in the table, they should probably have deserved that. But that's Zweite Liga for you. You actually gotta fight for it. It's not handed to you. But yeah, obviously, I mean, we at the start of the season where we were a bit skeptical on how they can kind of replace FIFA, so Luka FIFA, obviously, how this is going to work out for them, and that we weren't really sure with the people they brought in. But at the same time, I think it was one of the key factors that they didn't bring in like 8 players and said, okay, with this addition to the squad, we want to get promoted, but that the core stayed the same. Obviously, there's going to be a huge, huge task for Darmstadt with Patrick Pfeiffer going to, obviously one of the opponents when it comes to staying in the league. This is where we kind of put Augsburg always first. And obviously, that's going to be huge for them to kind of get through this. And obviously with Lieberknecht, he has been in the Bundesliga before with a club that, just from an outside perspective, doesn't look like they're going to survive. When they were there with Braunschweig, obviously, but yeah, just from that's just outside perspective. Like, obviously, Darmstadt was just, they had this way of, that I think annoyed opponents at some stage, that because they were so clinical, they kind of knew one goal can be enough. And then the rest of the game was just very hard to watch for just the neutrals, I think, which is not supposed to be in any kind of way without respect. It's just that's a quality you can have as a team, to annoy your opponents into not doing anything. Obviously, having a very, very strong defense, where even like I had the feeling towards the second leg, the opponents were given more opportunities, but because, yeah, if you have a goalkeeper like Schoen in goal, you want to give him something to build his reputation on as well. And obviously, that was a very, very strong performance throughout the season. And yeah, I think we've seen, yeah, what is can be key in the Zweite Bundesliga in very different ways, consistency, but also just a manager who really, really knows what to do with the squad. Both teams did that, and that's why obviously for the guys of Hoch und Weit, I had the opportunity to be in a podcast with Matthias once, they do a fantastic job, and I would really recommend listening to them in the Bundesliga if you're interested in all things. As for Darmstadt, and obviously congrats to them, to the fans, and to the officials as well, for managing to stay for going up, and obviously good luck in the Bundesliga.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch them. The one thing that will definitely help them is, I guess, in the way that they play with such efficiency going forward. They, when chances present themselves, very rarely do you see them burn them. They've got good game sense as well. And usually we found throughout this campaign, when they took a lead, very rarely were they going to give that lead up. And against teams that, especially teams that were heavy possession based sides, it worked into their favour. So, look, they're going to have to obviously strengthen the squad. Patrick Pfeiffer is a big loss for them. But in general, you know, that there are definitely areas that they'll look to strengthen. But yeah, I don't think anyone could begrudge their promotion. They, you know, been at the top of the hill for so long, and you know, they should be a little bit upset they didn't win the league. But it was a good season regardless. A point behind them was Hamburg. You had to reverse the ledger last season. Darmstadt missed out on a playoff spot by goal difference. Hamburg missed out on promotion by a singular point. They went to the playoffs and they were beaten 6-1 on aggregate by VfB Stuttgart, which means it is deja vu all over again for the league's best attack. They scored 70 goals this season, 45 against, and the goals they conceded a lot more in the Rückrunde. 20 wins, 6 draws, 8 losses. Top goal scorer was Robert Glatzel with 19. Next best was Ludovic Reis with 9. And then Ransford Yeboah Konigsdorfer, who didn't seem to have a lot of an impact later in the season, he had 8. Jean-Luc Dompé, who they also signed in the summer, he had the most assists with 11. It's another disappointing season, and one must question now, after 5 consecutive campaigns in the Zweite Bundesliga, whether they will ever get out of this wretched division. Let's hear from the boys from the Volkspark Geflüster on their thoughts of the 2022-23 season.
Moin to all listeners of the Second Bundesliga podcast. Here are Nando,
Berger,
Lasse,
and Lars
from the HSV podcast Volkspark Geflüster with our summary of the past HSV season.
The 5th season of the HSV in the second Bundesliga was the first season with continuity on the agenda. With the same coach, nearly the identical squad, the HSV set the bar high, promoted to the first division. After coming up short last year, this season was meant to be the final season in the second Bundesliga.
With László Bernes, Jean-Luc Dompé and Rensford Jeboer Königsdorfer, important positions in the squad depth were strengthened. As usual, the team started the season well, played a great first half, and ended up in second place, 2 points behind the league leader. Everything was in place to achieve the season's goal, but we wouldn't be HSV if everything went smoothly.
The suspension of our top defender Mario Vuskovic due to a positive EPO doping test, as well as some major key injuries and key players being banned, had their impact on the team's performances during the second half of our season. In the end, the regular season came down to a dramatic peak in the final minutes of the last regular season game. Heidenheim scored twice in an epic 15-minute stoppage time, safeguarding their own promotion and keeping HSV in the third place, which led us into relegation in the second straight year.
And again, we fell short at the end. Another groundhog day for us after the final whistle. We were out of words for a moment, but giving up is not an option. Good things come to those who wait, and there is only one club in the world worth waiting for.
Nur der HSV.
Thank you, guys. And look, it's obviously never easy to miss out, to become the first club to lose back-to-back playoff games from the Zweite Bundesliga side of things, which, you know, obviously created a lot of buzz of what they should do about the playoffs. And let's be honest, they're probably not going to change them. But there are some interesting statistics that come out of this season. You know, it's not often you have a team that scores 70 goals this season, and yet they have the league leader in big chances missed by Robert Glatzel, who had 29, which, just in context, that's 10 more than Fabian Schleusner, and I believe it's 14 more than Terence Boyd. That's problematic. He also, we don't know if he's going to be there. We'll find out. I think it's in a couple of days we'll know if he's going to be at HSV for another season. But you can't help but feel like it's another frustrating season. Normally, when a team has such consistency like they've had, they haven't finished lower than fourth in the 5 years they've been in the league. They haven't finished higher than third. Like, they've been close to the summit, and yet something seems to get in the way. And look, I think if we're probably being honest with ourselves, that when we knew that Hamburg were going into the playoffs, there was almost an inevitability that regardless of who they were going to play, they weren't going to be equipped to deal with whatever danger came forth, because as has been the case this season and last season, they only know how to play one way, and it just became very predictable football. And even though they made a run at the end, it was never going to be enough when you have to rely on other people to lose games.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I mean, it always seems so negative when we say, okay, they have a very solid plan A, and I mean, it can work. It worked for the majority of time. Like, listen, I mean, Hamburg still played good football for the majority of the time last season, this season. And I mean, they were only out of the top three at the very start of the season for match days. And they were, after that, they were always in the top three majority of the part. They were second and third. But the thing is, there were only three match days. They were the first. And that was in the first leg of the season. And I think this was one of the problems, that they were kind of always in the shadows of either Darmstadt or Heidenheim, and also still when Paderborn was in that mix as well. And they obviously, in the end, they managed to shackle off St. Pauli, Düsseldorf and Paderborn, but they didn't really manage to have a final push for the first part. I mean, obviously, it was a very, very dramatic end to the season. But the thing is that it kind of had the feeling that they couldn't really do the playoffs. And obviously, it's I would completely agree, the whole playoff system shouldn't exist. We talked about this plenty of times, where it shouldn't. And obviously, it mostly, especially when it comes to Bundesliga and Zweite Liga, it always prefers the Bundesliga club. And obviously, it's just very, very difficult. Even like, if you can see just from an outer perspective, if even Hamburg doesn't manage to do it, who are just, if you compare it to the rest of the season when it comes to squad and stuff, better equipped than probably other teams that were in their place before, who is it going to be? And I mean, obviously, when they changed the rules that obviously a draw can't really help you, more or less like it did with Union. It's going to be much more difficult when it comes to that as well. And yeah, the thing is, I mean, there were Hamburg had outstanding players. I really, really want to point out the importance of Ludovic Rice for the team. I think he is one of the players who had a fantastic season. I mean, you had Sonny Kittel, who was nearly gone, came back. Jean-Luc Dupin was a fantastic addition to the squad. But the biggest problem was probably their defense, although 45 goals doesn't seem a lot in the first, but I mean, it's more than 10 goals more than Darmstadt conceded. And obviously, they couldn't, we spoke about consistency both for Darmstadt and Heidenheim, and this was obviously the biggest problem. They couldn't get consistency in their defense out of various reasons. Obviously, we had the Vuskovic topic, and this is probably something Hamburg fans will come back to. But I mean, we also had that as soon as Schoenlau was injured and stuff, you had a huge influx of defensive mistakes. There were a lot, and I mean, the way Tim Walter plays football and his defensive build up. There will be always pressure on those last four. There will be pressure on the goalkeeper. And for that, you had the feeling that probably there was this, there were more than two players that were needed for this defensive stability. Kind of Vuskovic and Schoenlau. And then obviously we always talked about the players that came in, couldn't really fully fulfill that task, and obviously if you have that way of playing football where your defense has played an important role and you stand very high up on the pitch, and your opponents kind of figure out that if they attack that, it's a very easy way to the goal, and that happened, and obviously it was a problem. And I mean, it's just very difficult going into that new season. I mean, there were plenty of games where Hamburg showed what they could do, but especially I had the feeling that second leg of the season, it felt a bit weird from time to time that they were not always bringing their 100% on the pitch, just from outside perspective. And that, yeah, the problem really was that they could have had chances in the playoff, but they kind of, it was thrown away with their first game. And it was just very, very difficult. They scored an early goal in the second leg, but it's just, it always, if the first leg would have ended 1-0 or 2-0, okay, but you already have a 3-goal difference, and that it's still in the game itself. Obviously, Hamburg managed to, when we always think back to the Heidenheim game, that they showed they have comeback qualities, but obviously very different task here, and they couldn't really do it. And that's why in the end, obviously, Stuttgart were the deserved winner when it just comes to the two games. Still, when it comes to playoff and stuff, that's all obviously a difference. But yeah, it's going to be interesting how Hamburg is going to, yeah, reform for that new season. What ideas Tim Walter has, obviously, for him, this is a huge disappointment as well. And it's going to be, I think it's going to be a huge part of the new season. It's going to be a mental task. How to get that team to do more. And obviously, maybe, I don't know, because the pressure obviously will be on Hertha and Schalke. And they can kind of form a group with the likes of maybe Hanover and Düsseldorf. Paderborn I would put in the mix as well. St. Pauli, maybe. We don't really know. So there will be a bigger group of actually teams who are wanting to be in that mix. And maybe that's easier. Like this season when Schalke and Werder were down. And obviously this is where we're highest fall. We're third place as well. But yeah, it just feels like a huge, huge disappointment. But it feels like one where it's too easy for me to say, yeah, well, Heidenheim overperformed. Yeah, but you underperformed statistically. It's too easy to always look at other ones. And obviously the whole Vuskovic thing my opinion, Hamburg fans are completely deserved to be disappointed by this season, etc. But I think just from the self-understanding the club has, it's a bit too easy to only look at things like Vuskovic and stuff. Because in the end, this is what the DFB has to do when there are positive drug tests and stuff.
Yeah, and look, I think the best way to probably summarize the top three is solution by committee when injuries bestowed Heidenheim and Darmstadt. They had guys who could comfortably fill the role with relative ease as if like they'd been playing there all season. And Hamburg didn't really have that, especially defensively. Like, you know, Jonas David is okay. I think he showed that he can play at this level, but lacks the consistency, hence why he didn't play the second leg of the playoff. And Javi Montero just didn't get up to speed at all. He was one red card away from having the most red, equal most red cards for the season. and he played half a season. So, look, they obviously lack a bit of squad depth. I think Volta did a pretty good job in integrating some younger players, but again, those younger players couldn't sustain that level for long enough. So how they build the squad is going to be really challenging, because you suspect that there are going to be some players who might be a bit harder to retain heading into next season. I look at guys like Ludovic Rice in particular. If I was a club like a Mainz or one of the promoted clubs like Darmstadt, he would be someone I would look at quite the same with Stuttgart. I mean, you know, that's just the reality of the situation, is that, you know, there's a feeling of a last dance with this Tim Walter core. If it's not this year, you just don't know if it's ever going to happen. And like, I empathize with the Hamburg fans. It's not a particularly nice feeling. Let's take our one and only break, and on the other side, we'll discuss teams 4 through 6, starting with Fortuna Düsseldorf. A team that had promotion in its mind was Fortuna Düsseldorf. However, they would have been a little bit disappointed with how their season finished off. They were the first of the teams that did not make it into the top three, finishing fourth with 17 wins, 7 draws and 10 losses, 60 goals for and 43 against. They have a big hole to fill heading into next season with David Kovnatsky, who leaves for Werder Bremen. His 14 goals was the best for the club, and 9 assists, which was second most, is a big hole to fill. They also say goodbye to Ruven Hennings. He scored 6 times, which was equal second best with Felix Klaas and Shinta Appelkamp. Hennings is off to Sandhausen, and you'll hear from our good friend Lewis in part 3. Sandhausen are definitely going on the aggressive route to try and get back to the Zweite Bundesliga. They have the money. Appelkamp was their top assist guy with 10, but it definitely feels as if Daniel Thun's first full season in Düsseldorf was one of ups and downs, one that perhaps they'll be a little bit disappointed that they weren't able to be in a position to challenge for promotion, but one where next season in particular, depending on who they bring in, it's one where they're going to have to bring the heat in what will be a very tough Zweite Bundesliga season. Let's hear from our good friend Ben. He is the host of the Belgian Football Podcast and also a massive fan, Fortuna Düsseldorf fan. Let's hear what he had to say about the season that was.
Hey, Matt and Eva, thank you so much for asking me to do this again, and congrats on another year of the best football podcast around. It's just been a joy following the league with you guys as always. So for Fortuna, probably sum it up as quite a frustrating season, to be honest. I think most of us expected to be able to challenge for the top three, at least, because on paper it felt like we had a good team. We had a good coach as well, kind of how we finished last season. Started okay, obviously winning the first game against Magdeburg, but that early defeat in August to Sandhausen was just quite concerning and kind of something we'd see all too often this season. Looking back, it does make sense now that we lost kind of to Heidenheim, Hamburg and Darmstadt in the space of it felt like a month. And then following up that with a loss to Nuremberg as well, and just by then we're just playing catch up, and it's just something we never really able to recover from. It's just that kind of throughout the season, inconsistency really killed Fortuna, even with some really good performances from the likes of Shinta Appelkamp. obviously David Kovnatski as well. I think replacing Kovnatski is going to be really hard for us. 14 goals, 9 assists. It's just such a good return from him. It kind of had that feeling of when you get kind of like with NBA players, when they get into their kind of final year of the contract and they suddenly explode and perform better than they have done. And before you know it, they've gone and you've got absolutely nothing in return. So it's a bit of a smack in the face to lose Kovnacki for absolutely nothing. But yeah, they kind of knew that going into the season that was going to be the case. And fair play to him, he still performed for us, even though he knew he was leaving. It just wasn't quite enough. Really did kind of end the Hinrunde quite badly. Those defeats to Hannover and Kaiserslautern. And then kind of the 4-1 defeat to Paderborn to start the Rückrunde after we'd just beaten Magdeburg again was just quite deflating, because we were kind of banking on that kind of Rückrunde push towards the top three to really kind of give ourselves a chance of promotion. But that really did just kind of set us back. And it's just something, yeah, like I said, we saw all too often, that season. We did manage, obviously, to draw with Heidenheim and Hamburg this time around, but they were both down to 10 men and we couldn't quite capitalise, which, again, really frustrating, because if we'd done that, we could have really given us some momentum. We then go and beat Darmstadt, which at that point we're thinking, okay, yeah, maybe we are back in this. Maybe we're back in with a chance of promotion. Then we lose to flipping Nuremberg again. We just cannot beat that team this season. No matter how bad they are, they just seem to have the better of us this year. That really did kill us, as well as the 2-2 draw with Arminia Bielefeld as well. Like, those kind of results after beating Darmstadt just felt like really frustrating. That we'd wasted a good performance against the best team in the league to then follow it up against teams we should have really beaten. Again, yeah, that inconsistency really, really did kill us. I feel like we kind of say it every year now, but obviously with Konatsky going, we're looking to someone like Emmanuel Loya. He just seems to be always the one we're looking at to kind of push on, but then injuries get in the way. But hopefully he can do kind of the replacement for him next season. Also, I'm one of the fans that would kind of like Tune to stay. I'm a big fan of him. I just want him to do well. I feel like, yeah, he can be successful. We just, with the right players coming in, hopefully we'll be able to do it next year. But it just really did feel like this was the season to do it, with the likes of Hertha now and Schalke coming back down. As I'm recording this, it looks like Hamburg are also going to be staying in the league as well. So they'll probably take third or fourth spots. So there's only two spots left to take after those guys, and Hertha and Schalke will probably be the two favourites for that one. So yeah, it feels like a little bit of a missed opportunity, but I think kind of in the wider picture of being a Fortuna fan, I think obviously the news about kind of the games free for fans is just amazing. And it's just something you can be really proud of as a Fortuna fan in an age where fans just seem to be getting ripped off and kind of stripped of all their money just to watch football. The club has decided that they don't want to be like that, and they kind of want to go against the grain in that sense. So that's something really positive, I think, as a Fortuna fan, that we can definitely be proud of. It was nice to see loads of people talking about the club in such a good way, but hopefully it'll just be one more year of watching free Bundesliga 2 football next season, and then we can watch a bit of Bundesliga football. But yeah, overall disappointed with how the season went. I felt we could have done a lot better with what we had on paper, but in the end, still love being a Fortuna fan. And yeah, well done guys on another fantastic year of the podcast.
Thank you for the kind words, Ben. And of course, if you want to stay up to date with all things Belgian football, especially after that crazy finale in the Belgian League, which saw Royal Antwerp win the title with a stoppage time goal from Toby Alderweireld, those guys do a great job. Definitely give Ben a follow. He's a cracking guy, and great podcast to listen to. They really chop it up quite nicely. But I he's covered it very well. It's one of frustration, and hindsight's 2020 now that we know who's in the league for next season. But I think there's going to be a constant theme with certain teams, and Fortuna's just another one of those where this was the year, and this is going to be the same thing in England as well. You have such what is going to be such a competitive campaign in starting in 6 weeks' time. That this was the chance to go up, and again, with certain players leaving and how that squad looks next season, it's going to be very difficult for them to replicate what they were able to achieve this season.
Yeah, and I mean, I do feel Benson, and I mean, I had them kind of be top of the league or in that mixture as well. And I mean, it really felt like it from time to time. But I think Ben really captured it perfectly that you're missing consistency, that inconsistency throughout the season. It was a huge problem. And I mean, it kind of fourth place is except on third place, I'm actually two. It's the best positioning in the table for the whole season, and I mean, then you can't be really just from performance wise. This is actually the optimum they could get out of this season in the end. And I mean, I do really think it fits, especially when it comes to that they didn't manage to win against the top three teams in the end, and obviously. The even bigger problem that they lost against teams like Nuremberg, that they couldn't get a win against Bielefeld and stuff, so that even in games where they look like there should be the clear winner, that they couldn't really pull that. That definitely felt like huge disappointment for them, and obviously the squad needs rebuilding due to the. Yeah, due to the fact that Kovnatski is leaving Hennings, obviously, so there will be a lot of pressure on players like Iowa and Uppercamp, and obviously, what other additions to the teams that will be. I would like to see Daniel Thune stay on. I think he fits to the way Düsseldorf, or what they can do, he fits to the club. I think the fans like him. I don't really. You at least put them back in the position where they are in the upper half of the table. If you look back at when Thune took over, and I mean, this probably might be a start just to bring them into kind of a position where they are able to have some saying when it comes to promotion come next season, and just to have some sort of consistency on that position as well. Do you think that would be the better case? Obviously it's a bit difficult speaking about Düsseldorf because it's they had a situated season when it comes to in terms of what they could do, like when they really put 100% on the pitch, they showed a very, very good football. But obviously, because they had matches like the feet to Paderborn, and obviously what Ben pointed out, it just wasn't enough, and they wouldn't really have deserved to be in that position probably come end of the season. Obviously, they had their own personal fight with St. Pauli and Paderborn. I think this is what made the rest of the season a bit interesting, and you didn't really have those number of teams behind the third place. You could really relax towards the end of the season, but they kept on fighting with at least for other teams or for other fans was interesting to look at. I mean, I think the biggest problem was the whole draw with St. Pauli, where St. Pauli looked like they were even the better team. This is where Düsseldorf needs to be more mature, I think. They need to develop some sort of maturity in games like this, where they, like Darmstadt, like Heinheim and parts even, as like Hamburg, just convincing that they're the better team and they're gonna just roll with this, and even if they are not the better team, that they can pick up all 3 points. And this was probably what's missing in too many games.
Yeah, there were a few games where they just lacked the intensity, the killer instinct. You referenced the St. Pauli game, and they were just a non-factor for so long that, you know, they definitely shouldn't have got a result, if we're being honest. But yeah, their best and their worst is probably still a little bit too far away. Against teams they should mop the floor with, they just couldn't do it. As Ben and you've mentioned, Nuremberg, a team that was just very poor for a lot of the season. I mean, they were beaten. They gave Marcus Weintzel his first win of the season at home towards the end of the Hinrunde. And I remember watching that game vividly, and just they were all, like, just sort of just didn't do anything, and Nuremberg had one chance and they scored, and and quite similar, just the lack of, you know, like they just couldn't, anything they did in terms of changes just didn't work in those games. So obviously if they want to be a promotion contender next season, they've got to beat the bad teams, not let games draw out, and obviously you know, when they've got the dominance, take advantage. But how they fix the squad in terms of the players that have departed, that's really going to dictate what area we think they're going to be in for next year. Now let's go to St. Pauli. Now, if we talk about seasons of two halves, St. Pauli was one of those teams. They started the season with Timo Schulz. He lasted the only the Hinrunde. It was bad. 15th. Fabian Hützler comes in, and they managed to finish in the exact same position they finished last season. 5th. But obviously a lot more chaotic. 16 wins, 10 draws, 8 losses, 55 goals for, 39 goals against. They were the best defensive team in the Rückrunde. Karol Metz in particular had a great impact alongside Eric Smith and Jakob Medic. Lukas Daschner was their top scorer with 9, but he will not be there next season. He's heading to VfL Bochum. Lert Pakarada as well. He led with assists. The assist numbers, he had 10. He is heading to FC Köln in the summer as well. Let's get some perspective. And for the first time, we welcome the guys from the Millenturm, Tim and Mike. They take us through their highlights and lowlights of this season.
Hello, hello, dear Zweite Bundesliga Pod. This is St. Pauli calling. Here are the results of the Millenturm jury. First of all, we'd like to thank you for a wonderful show during the whole season. You've been fantastic hosts. Okay. Stop the Eurovision sound contest bullshit. My name is Mike. With me is Tim. So Tim, tell me, what overall statement about the FC St. Pauli season would you like to give to the audience?
Yes, the audience need to listen to me, because what I want to say is that was a ride for FC St. Pauli this season. So first half of the season, we were nearly at the bottom. Just, I think, Mike, correct me if I'm wrong, 1 point to the bottom, right? Oh, after half of the season?
You are the expert.
So I think it was 1 point. And in the end, we were so close to get promoted, or at least to get into the playoffs for the promotion. But that was a ride. So we all, I think I speak for almost all St. Pauli fans, we all love Timo Schulz. And it was really heartbreaking. A lot of supporters were like broken afterwards and felt like they could never ever be fans of FC St. Pauli any longer. And Fabian Hützler, the new coach, he gave some kind of a new spirit to the squad, and also to the complete club. It feels like for the complete club, and at the end, it was simply really a ride.
Yeah, that's correct. So we were asked to bring one high and a low light for each of us. So would you like to start with your low light?
Yes, of course. And I already forgot. So we've spoken at the before that we started the recording. We have spoken about what is your low light, and I already forgot what I've chosen. Now I remember. It was the defeat in Bielefeld, and not because it was Bielefeld and Bielefeld were so bad this season. No, it was because St. Pauli at this week they have won against HSV. The derby 3-0, and everyone thought, okay, now we are back on track, we can achieve more than we have played so far. And then during the week we've played at Freiburg, we've lost in Freiburg at the second round of the DFB Pokal, and then I think it was a Friday night we've played in Bielefeld, a really good first half, and then the second half the complete like card house were falling down, and it was like really, really, really annoying to lose, I think, 2-0 there in Bielefeld. And it felt like really bad. So it felt like, okay, this season is, lost, and it might can get critical for us. But in the end, everything was good. But at this moment, it felt like really bad.
Yeah, I need to correct you. It was a Saturday evening. Probably this was one of the very few highlights of IFA. So greetings at that point. Sorry. my low light definitely was the Derby loss. And I could say it was the series of 10 wins, because after every single win, I thought, oh no, let's not get into that position again where we need to calculate, where we need to look at the table, where we might get back into promotion race and so on. Because if we do, we will definitely lose the Derby. Yeah, and in the end, it was exactly like that. And it was a great game. We had them where we wanted them. We were so close to win that game. But in the end, we lost 4-3, and it was really devastating.
And it was, so everything sucks there at Volkspark, to be honest.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, so the complete evening was just, sucked.
Okay, maybe I just continue with my personal highlight. And this was 2 weeks after. It was the win in Darmstadt. Darmstadt was ready to celebrate. They were on the edge of promotion. They just needed a win against us. And we had at least small chances to get back into a promotion race. But to be honest, no one really believed that we could do it. And then this, again, Saturday evening in Darmstadt, it was just a magical night. We were so good in this game. And it was a 3-0 win. And I still did not believe that we would get promoted. But for me, it was the more or less the end of a fantastic season, and especially of the second half of the season. And it was just really, really great evening. So what was your highlight?
So it was the complete second half of the season, because so this 10 in a row, this 10 wins in a row was so great. So I jumped on the hype train quite early and thought, okay, I calculated quite early if what we still can achieve. And it was just great to see how the squad developed under Fabian Hürzeler. So after the winter break, with a few players that were coming to the club during the winter break, and then the new system or the new tactical improvements of Fabian Hürzeler. And it was so great to see how this squad developed over the second half of the season, and we're getting more and more comfortable with the game plan they used to play. And it was great to see, and to see how what great team we have there on the pitch every week. It was great to see. So I liked it a lot, and I'm, even though the season is just for a few days, I'm already started looking for the next season.
Yeah, correct. And we, of course, are very much looking forward to listening again to you next season. So keep up the good work, and thanks for bringing us a very good show every single week. That's it from our side. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you, Mike and Tim. And yes, everything St. Pauli, if you're looking for the ultimate comprehensive coverage of the boys in brown, the Millerton in the German language is the place to go. He mentioned Eurovision, and we all know that Australia is going to win Eurovision before Germany does, which it's just a fact. We just know this is the case. So, no lies told here. Look, their contrast in seasons was incredible. You look at the first half, they were 15th, teetering relegation. The Rückrunde was incredible. 13 wins out of 17. They only lost twice. 14 goals conceded, which was two better than Heidenheim. They were 7 points better than the next best team in the Rückrunde. Statistically, they were a completely different team. If you looked at, as we said back in October, if there was a team that was one of the teams that was in desperate need of the break, it was St. Pauli. They were a completely different unit, and it showed. And now we get to kind of this coming season where they can't repeat the same mistakes they made. Otherwise, all of this progression that they've had will be for naught. So what was your overall impression of their season? Because obviously we've covered it, they've covered it. But what can they really take out of this campaign as a whole? Because there have been some players that have really risen to the occasion, and there are some who they brought in the summer that really failed to make an impression.
So, yeah, overall, I mean, this is one of the most difficult teams to speak about, because obviously when we only look at the last couple of weeks, it was a fantastic season for them. But I think the biggest task was on Pauli is to, and it's going to be very difficult, have two good parts of the season, first of all. And to do that, obviously, they really, really have to have a look at and how to rebuild the squad with everyone who's leaving, obviously, with key players like Leo Pacarada and obviously Lucas Dushner, who really, really had a, under Huitzola, had a much better spell, I think, than before. I think he scored three goals under Timo Schulz, and the rest of the goals he scored under Huitzola. Obviously, it had something to do with how Huitzola let his team play. But yeah, I think this is something we have to speak about, is apparently why they have such difficulties in performing the first half of this season, why they always kind of put themselves in the position where they have to have a fantastic and outstanding second part of the season, and why, although the majority of the squad is the same, except someone like Dapa for Lyon, who obviously was fantastic. But there is, like, especially when you look at the defense, this is something that was the same, why and why you could still see glimpses of this defensive mishaps that they had throughout the season, when you come to the to beginning and stuff, and why there were games like obviously against Bielefeld, where you had a good first half, you couldn't really bring it on the score sheet, and then you were beaten by a team that was not really better than you, but just kind of managed to get the goals and then win the game. And it looked like a game that was really clear. And obviously, this was one of the last games where Bielefeld didn't concede a goal. No, but I mean, in general, obviously, that squad was good. That obviously, you have players like kind of Metcalf, who really took some time to get into the physical aspect of the Zweite Bundesliga compared to Australian football. I think you would agree that it took him some time to actually manage, and obviously then the way of playing, how Fabian Huitzler wanted him to play, really fit him, and he could do more. But yeah, I mean, in general, it was such a weird season for St. Pauli, and I do want to see what Fabian Huitzler can do when it comes to start of the new season. But I think this is really something St. Pauli needs for actually being a team that we can put out for promotion, that they desperately need consistency in their season, because otherwise it's going to be very exhausting to always kind of put yourself out of this bottom half of the table to get you back up again. And I obviously it's good to be fifth place in the end, but they were 15th. They were the worst place in the table was 16th, and this is obviously something you have to, if the squad can stay the same for the rest of the part, this is really something they have to attack for the new season, because this is, we've seen it in the past, the teams that get promoted besides the big teams are teams that have consistency, that showed a couple of seasons that they have this kind of mean of play and mean of points they pick up, means of table plays, and this is something St. Pauli did not have, although they might end up in that first 10 in the end. It's, they could be better, or they just could make it easier for themselves.
Yeah, and And obviously this window is arguably the most important window for them in terms of the direction that they're going to go in the short to medium term. Obviously the big replacement's going to be at left back, and they clearly need a number nine, because the options that they've had, I mean, Daschner by trade is really more of an attacking midfielder, but out of necessity and form, he really galvanized the chance to be a number one attacking option with Afellayan, or it was whether it was Metcalf or Saad as well. So like their window in the winter was actually far more effective in terms of overall product on the pitch than the guys they brought in the summer. So yeah, what they do in this coming window is going to be quite massive, but you know, there's definitely faith that they've got a bit more of structural identity that they can be successful in the short to medium term. And finally, let's talk about Paderborn. They are our sixth and final team for part one of our season review. Bit of a disappointing season for them, much like Fortuna Düsseldorf. They had some incredibly great performances. They started the season off like with the wet sail. They're the 5-0 win against Karlsruhe. They put 7 past Kiel, and this team looked unstoppable, but they petered out and finished sixth in the end. 68 goals for, 44 against, 16 wins, 7 draws, 11 losses. Marvin Pieringer was statistically one of their best players. 14 goals and 10 assists. Robert Leipertz, who joined from Heidenheim, what a time to leave Heidenheim on a free. He had 13 goals, and Florent Meslier was fantastic. He had 10. Julian Justvan also had 10 assists. Rafael Obermar, who they got from Magdeburg in the summer, had 5 assists. Lukas Kwasniok coached 33 of the 34 games. He did not coach the last game of the season, based on what happened in Mallorca the week before. Frank Kasperi had the final game, but it was announced that Kwasniok would be coaching next season. Let's hear from Matthias, who runs the AC Paderborn 07 unofficial English Twitter and the podcast. Let's hear what he had to say.
Hello, it is Matthias from the AC Paderborn 07 account on Twitter and podcast as well. I appreciate you guys for getting me on the podcast. I think it's the third season in a row now that I've been tasked to review AC Paderborn 07's season. It's always an honour to be on it, so I appreciate it, and it's been another great season from you guys as well. So reviewing Paderborn's season is very interesting because it's extremely similar to last season, really. Paderborn had a fantastic start this season, just as they did last season. You know, they were beating Karlsruhe 5-0 on the opening day, beating Kiel 7-2. Goals were just flowing, and at one point they'd scored the most goals ever at a point in a match day. I think it was something like match day 10 or something. They'd scored the most goals that had ever been scored at that point. So, look, the attack was absolutely flying, and they probably peaked too early. It was a little bit unfortunate. They had a bad run at the start of November. They lost 4 matches in a row, and really the momentum just was killed going into the World Cup break. Very similar to last season, you know, they had a fantastic start last season, and towards the end of the year, it just sort of fell off a little bit. And there's been probably steps forward going in the squad. I think some of the signings have been fantastic. Bashir Humphreys from Chelsea on a loan deal was a great added quality for the defence that probably did need it. And obviously losing Fabian Bürgelmuth, your sporting director, midway through the season to Stuttgart was not ideal. I think they replaced well with Benjamin Weber, ex-assistant of Thomas Tuchel at Chelsea. So there could be some sort of Chelsea partnership created between the two teams. I think the loan really worked for Bashir Humphreys, and the loan really worked for Paderborn as well. I thought players like Sörlot Conte were amazing this season. It's going to be interesting to see if they can keep him with Bundesliga interest, but he was just a ridiculous outlet ball. You know, every time they went long, Sörlot Conte was on it. So he was a fantastic signing. Maxi Rohr from Hamburg on a loan was also a fantastic signing, could play anywhere on the park. and be interesting if they can keep him. And I think the main sort of departure that's probably going to happen now is Ron Schallenberger, the captain, the defensive midfielder, has been so good this season and the past few seasons, and he probably does deserve that Bundesliga move, and I'm not too sure where he'd go, to be honest, but I think he's going to leave. But the foundations are there, that, you know, Paderborn are creating good foundations now. They're recruiting very early. They've already got some youth players in, and David Kinsombi, a very talented Zweite Liga striker from Sandhausen, who's been a shining light for Sandhausen the last few years. So he's going to be a fantastic replacement if we let go of Conte, or, you know, Denis Szweny's probably going to leave this season because of his contract expiring. I just want to give a shout out to retiring Uwe Hoenemeyer, who's been just a fantastic servant for the club and scored some fantastic goals as well. You know, his defensive play has always been rock solid, always putting his body on the line. But he scored some really important goals, especially in the promotion season of 2018-19. So yeah, he put his feet up now, and I'm sure he'll enjoy retirement. The one issue I think Paderborn have heading into next season is the coaching situation. Obviously, there was some quite concerning news of Lukas Kwasniok being arrested in Mallorca. That's not good. I think we could record a full podcast on that. But I would say my personal opinion here, I think he should be fired for it. But I guess some people would rather see the facts released first. But look, it's not a good look, is it? Especially when there's still a game to go. You know, being in Mallorca for the first place is, looks bad. And then this allegation kind of just tops it off. So that's an issue. Yeah, I think Paderborn have the foundations to be a promotion fighting team next season. They've got to be more consistent. Yeah, I think the brights are light in Paderborn right now. And next season, hopefully, I'll be reviewing a promotion season from Metsä Paderborn. But thank you, guys, once again. Good luck for the rest of the podcast.
Yeah, the highs and the lows of Paderborn's season, you don't often say about a team that finishes in the top six, were quite drastic, and he was right in lamenting how they ended the Hinrunde, four consecutive defeats. It kind of almost took the sail out of their charge, per se, and very similar to Fortuna Düsseldorf, where they dropped games to teams that they probably shouldn't have. You know, you look at, in that run of games, they lost to Bielefeld in what was Bielefeld's last clean sheet of the year, the entire season. But, you know, they just couldn't, when players like Pieringer in particular, they didn't seem to have strong enough solutions to cater for him. Plato seemed always injured. Great, good one, Matt. Denis Szweny, he had 33 appearances and only managed four goals. He's going to Greta Fürth in the summer on a free, which is an interesting move. But they just, yeah, you could see that they were another one of those squads where depth, when it got stretched, they really struggled to keep the cohesion together. And they're another team that you would say faces a pretty uncertain offseason.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, the whole Kwasniok thing, I mean, Benjamin Viva said that they're behind, like, Kwasniok is the coach and is going to stay on the coach. Don't really completely know what to say to that. But yeah, I mean, when it comes to all things Paderborn, I mean, we kind of know that we get some sort of entertainment on the pitch with them, that they... it's just as a neutral, it's a lot of fun watching them play. That just from, like, that they have a good idea going forward, that they do say, like, Kwasniok had kind of similar style, like Baumgart, that in terms of you could always ask this question, do you want to rather win 1-0 or 4-3? Always have a feeling it's 4-3, so you... sometimes this offensive play costs them a bit of leakage, that they just don't have the same sort of defensive structure as they do offensively. Although I want to say that it's a bit different under Kwasniok, that they were a bit more stable when it comes to that. But I think, obviously you could see that the injuries really kind of cost them this season a bit, maybe, just if you look at the way how they performed in the table as well, that we're always in the top three or four kind of up until the break, and then the best place was fourth place. So it's similar to what I said about Düsseldorf, kind of. This is where, if you take the whole season into account, this is probably one of the best things they could do. And there were just a couple of games, like, for example, the 2-2 against Bielefeld as well, so where they probably should have gotten more out of it just to keep on going, so that they were, each team, like the St. Pauli, Düsseldorf, Paderborn, they all each had this one kind of game where they just couldn't, like, where they should have won to put them in a position where they could do it. I think one of the biggest problems Paderborn had is that just physical, they weren't always up for the tasks. So for example, when you look at the headers, they're 15th, below them are Hamburg, Fürth and Magdeburg. This is one of the things. So in duels like that, they weren't really there. That's where they kind of had sometimes they had problems when they had through ball attacks and stuff, and that sometimes they couldn't really, when their opponent had one or two individual players that were better, couldn't really put them, kind of take them out of the game. But all in all, I think Paderborn didn't have the pressure to go up. I think the likes of Düsseldorf was more there, but they're always a team you kind of can put into that bottom half of the table in the top 5 to 6, kind of, and more or less never wrong with that. So I think it's just a bit disappointing if you look at the beginning, but I think I have the feeling that Paderborn fans were not too sad with how the season ended, although probably they were sad that they, in this three mix with St. Pauli and Düsseldorf, that they ended up last. That's probably the only thing where they were a bit disappointed.
Yeah, I mean, you always, as fans, we're always demanding more, and you can understand from that. But you know, they've got a good core, and they're another one of those teams where a strong off season of recruitment can really set them in a good position. One of the guests we've got coming on for part two, who's a UEFA certified coach, we're talking about their club, and there are a bunch of clubs that will need another number nine, a guy who can really lead the line. Piring is probably not coming back. He's most likely going to a Bundesliga club because he doesn't want to play Zweite Bundesliga. Fair enough. So there's going to be like a bunch of clubs that are going to be drawing for guys who can elevate them to the next level or give them that sort of push in terms of goals. They scored 68 goals this year, so they know they've got a game plan that works, that can get them going forward, get them into great positions. But how they beef up the squad is going to be absolutely vital in their hope for promotion. I was going to end it, but I was just reading while we were listening to Matthias that this goes back to Hamburg. Apparently, Robert Glatzel is staying. He's got a deal that is extended to, I think it is 2027. That's just been reported by Andenblatt. So, yeah, there you go. Now we can leave. We'll be back later this week to go through teams 7 to 12 and what was an unbelievable Zweite Bundesliga season. We'll see you soon. We hope you enjoy your week. And we'll be back when the Zweite Bundesliga returns.